Get a deeper connection with the Cougars of BYU Sports.
God gives us a gift, and we use that gift until he takes it away.
Deep Blue.
Just sitting down afterward and being really tired and thinking like, wow, I just won the U.S. championship.
This is Deep Blue. Here's your host, Jason Shepherd.
Thanks for tuning in for a new episode of Deep Blue. This is the show where we get to know the person behind the number that you see on the field or the court. These are the true stories of BYU athletes from their very own mouths. My guest today, former BYU quarterback, Jaren Hall. Jaren, it is always good to see you. How are you, my friend?
I'm good, Shep. It's good to see you.
Yeah, it's always good. Seeing you brings back so many memories. We're going to get through a lot of them, but it's not just football memories. It's baseball memories, too.
Kind of where it started for us.
It is.
We started in the dugout.
Started in the dugout. We're going to get to all of that during the course of the podcast, but I believe that this is the first time since at least I have been the host of this podcast that I've gone the father and son route and had both on the show. And obviously, not at the same time, but we had your dad, Kalen, on a few months back. And now you, how is Pops and the family doing, by the way?
Good. They're just grinders, man. Holly and Kalen just working. Kids, Kyson, Matea, Doss, they're all working, doing their thing. KJ's playing the dad role, working. So everyone's just busy.
Everybody's busy with life.
Yeah.
Everyone's busy with life. Sneaks up on you, doesn't it?
Oh, man, it goes fast.
So,
it goes really fast.
You're an NFL free agent right now.
Mm-hmm.
Where do things stand with you right now and potential jobs and opportunities for you?
It's open. You know, I'm just hoping I can land somewhere for camp in a few weeks and just have a chance to compete for a spot. You know, it's good opportunity ahead. I feel positive about it, but, you know, we'll see. The NFL is a roller coaster.
Well, and it's not like you're taking time off. You've been
keeping
up training. The grind. You've been on campus working out and doing that kind of stuff, right?
Got to stay ready. You never know when a workout comes or a camp invite, so I'm going to stay grinding. So that's all I can do right now.
That's what I like that. So you found a new home after leaving the Vikings with Seattle. Now you're looking for a new landing spot, and I'm curious, you know, we see this every year where, you know, guys get released or waived or both sides realize it's not a great fit. And so you work something out. I'm wondering what it's like when you get that call or you finally come to that decision where, you know what, it's probably time to look for a different situation. What's that process like?
Yeah, it's interesting being on both sides of, you know, deciding with the team to move on and having a bit of a surprise, you know, between both of my releasings already, I've been on both sides. So it's been interesting. You know, the one that's a surprise and you don't expect, that one is, for me, it came as the first time getting cut in Minnesota. And it was a bit of a whirlwind. You have, you know, expectations and you have this plan. You start to build a financial folder and you start to look at your future. And then it's just kind of done and you don't know what's going to happen. So I mean, I don't think it's any different than any other job, you know, when you get let go or you have to move on. It's you kind of fall back onto to habits of working and then just hoping. And then, you know, Seattle, I had a good relationship with them through the draft process and their coaches. And then I knew the GM really, you know, he liked my game. So we you know, landed there a couple of days after and it was great. You know, and then they go and they bring on another backup, you know, who's Drew Locke, a great player behind Sam Darnold, who's starting. And then they draft, you know, Jalen Milroe, great talent college. So then you're in another situation,
right?
You know, of not enough mouths. There are too many mouths to feed in that QB room. So kind of agreed to just be released so I could go and try to find another place to land and compete. And so we'll see what happens at this point, you know, could end up back in Seattle with a P-Squad opportunity potentially, or could land somewhere else and go hopefully compete for a roster spot. And that's ideally what, you know, what'll come about from this.
So you're open to practice squad, any opportunity, any options
Open to? No, you get to this point as a quarterback, you know, when so few guys get to play in the league and there's so few opportunities, you take the opportunities that are there. So I'm, you know, just hoping for something positive.
So take me through the process, because as we mentioned, you know, you're doing everything that you can personally do in terms of staying ready for an opportunity. Do you just leave it in the hands of your agent? And take me through that process.
Yeah.
And how often you guys communicate and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, my agent, Ryan Toner, is, you know, the best of the best. You know, started with Ben Roethlisberger and now has guys, you know, like Marcus Mariota, Carson Wentz, Jared Goff, just to name a few, and then a bunch of other, you know, quarterbacks. I'm sure I'm forgetting and position players, but he's been around for a long time. So I just do my part of grinding, making sure I stay ready. You know, in the event he gets me workouts and other things, and I just wait for a call or a text. You know, so I don't know what to expect. You know, going into year three and you know my first full year of free agency. So I'm just kind of learning. You know, how often conversations come, and you know if nothing hits the phone, that means just time to keep working harder and just hope.
Is there a type of system or a scheme that you feel you are best suited for, or do you feel you're so adaptable that you could make whatever adjustments you needed to make to fit in wherever?
Yeah. If you'd asked me that a year ago, I guess if you'd asked me that before the NFL, I'd have told you I could adapt to anything. And then after Minnesota, pro style, West Coast, I'd have told you that was it because I loved that system so much. It made sense, the verbiage, the concepts, the run game. And then after going to Seattle this last year was so different. Now my answer is I'll take whatever I can. Because that offensive system in Seattle with Ryan Grove was so different than the West Coast. So already in two seasons, I've had two completely different systems. You know, so I think I could pick up anything and you know, just looking for an opportunity to do that.
Certainly, it's not unique. There are lots of young NFL players who also have families, but that is your situation. Yeah. You know, a lot of guys leave college and they start their NFL careers. They're all by themselves.
It's different.
You're married. You have kids. Mm-hmm. How has this journey been with them, and how have they handled all of this stuff?
They've been troopers. My wife, Brianna, she's unbelievable, handling the moves, handling the OTAs of me being gone and flying back and forth across the country, you know, taking on a house by herself. She's been amazing. So I think she understood what we were getting our hands into when we started, though, you know, having enough people to talk to and wives of other players. So she was kind of ready for it, and so was I. You know, but you add two little kiddos to the mix, and that's where it gets a little crazy. So, you know, you can look at a whole bunch of reasons why that would be, but it's been fun. And, you know, their memories we're trying to create, trying to keep it positive, keep the stress to a minimum, but it's hard to do sometimes. But it's fun to have them to navigate this with.
How much has your family grown stronger together and you and your wife's relationship grown stronger? Being out in Minnesota by yourselves and then in Seattle, and it's just you guys.
Yeah.
How much has that helped you guys grow together as a family?
Yeah, it brings the world of, you know, friends being involved and family to just you. When you're by yourselves in a new city, you're traveling together, you're all you have. You know, I'm at work all day and she's trying to meet, you know, people in the wards out there or girls that she can, you know, hang out with and other moms of kids. But at the end of the day, it's always me coming home to her and the kids and saying our hellos and you know, doing the nighttime routine. So we got a lot closer, you know, and then off-season's great being together 24/7. I think this off-season's been a little funny because we're together so much that it's almost like, all right, yeah, we need some space. You know, she's like, get away from me. Go play golf or something. So it's been a lot of fun. We've been able to grow together and really just now I'm going to keep going on and on, make this longer, but I just think about when we got married, I was playing baseball, going right into baseball season, my first year playing. And so that's all we've both known. It's just me being at the field. You know, she was working two jobs at the time. So it didn't slow down going into my first 2 years starting at BYU and then in the NFL. So this year has really been the first time we've been able to spend a lot of time together. So it's been a blessing in disguise in that way.
You've obviously, you know, had this experience as an athlete in juggling the athletic side of things and the career side of it with the family side. But are you the type of guy that when you leave your job, whether it's a good day or a bad day on the practice field or in a game, are you able to leave that there and not bring it home? Or is that something that you've had to work through? Because sometimes it's tough, yeah, for me, I know, but I'm not in a situation like you as well.
In college, I say, yeah, I did a pretty good job. I did a really good job. I was able to get everything I needed to get done in the building. Take time to help, you know, get Jada down. Me and Bree spend our time together, watch our show, and then I get on my film and do my thing. It's less in college, right? There's just far less you got to handle, especially, you know, I've been in the system for 5 years by the time I was done. So I didn't have as much stuff to do. But then you get in the NFL, and I'd say by the time I was starting for a few weeks, you know, those few games I got to start, it was really hard coming home to get that off your mind because as a rookie, your first time playing, it's a lot going on in your brain. It's hard to detach from that. But Bree was really helpful. Probably didn't do as good as I should have, but I mean, that was the first year in the NFL, yeah, and trying to understand what it looks like. I think now, if I were to get another opportunity to be in that situation, I think I, you know what to expect and know what I need to do. So, Say different times, yes, and the other times, no.
Everybody knows you, obviously, as a quarterback. I'm curious, why was the quarterback position the position that you wanted and fought for so hard?
Shoot, I don't know if I did want it. I think my dad being a running back, him and KJ, they got their heads freaking beat in so dang much.
So you saw what they went through.
Yeah, he pushed me. He made me play quarterback. It was our eighth grade, or no, I was 8 years old when I first started, and he put a ball in my hands, probably because I played baseball. He wanted me to play quarterback, and I kind of stuck with it. And then, you know, it grew on me. So do you
think that because of your, you know, with your dad and with Jamal Willis, who obviously they're very, very close, mm-hmm. and you grew up with him as well, running backs, do you think that that's where you would have gone had you chosen on your own?
I don't know. I have never actually thought about that. I might have, because, I mean, my brother KJ was a running back. I looked up to him. I wore number one in baseball and basketball because he did, so I watched him a lot. I might have. I don't know if I'd have liked the contact, though. I've always kind of been a sissy with that stuff, so I might have quickly realized that I wanted, maybe I'd have been a kicker or a punter or something, you know, just to avoid getting popped upside the head, but it grew on me. So, yeah, I don't know. That's a good question.
So you said being a quarterback grew on you. When did you begin to enjoy it? Because certainly you're pretty good at it.
I'm okay. High school 7-on-7 was a lot of fun. That's when I really started to love it. Playing in the backyard was always fun. Like baseball was always my first sport. So I love just throwing the ball around, baseball, football, whatever. But in a competitive setting, 7-on-7 was really fun in high school. Going to, you know, the BYU 7-ons, the Ute shoot up at Utah. Those were really good weekends and in fun football. That's probably when I really started to love playing quarterback, because you get the excitement of scoring very often in 7-ons, right? It's different than a game. And then that probably carried me through high school and into college.
How did things change for you once the attention started coming your way and you started getting the attention from schools and the recruiting process began to ramp up? How did you handle all that?
I mean, I think I handled it pretty well. I stayed pretty busy. You know, as soon as football was done, I was into basketball and then baseball. And my dad took care of a lot of that stuff. KJ was a great example, the most humble dude. You know, anybody knows him knows he's just a hard worker and humble. So I think I took that from him a little bit. I mean, you probably ask my friends and family. They probably answer it better. I don't think I changed too much. Just kept my head down, kept working, and probably kicked it into gear a little bit more. You know, once that happened, I'm sure my dad was involved and kind of pointing me in the right direction of how to get to the next level, you know, because that's the gate, if you will, to get in, and then you keep going. So, I think I just put my head down and then just stayed busy, you know, stayed out of trouble and just kept working for the bigger prize in the end.
Did you enjoy the recruiting process? I know there are a lot of people that don't, and it evolves, but did you enjoy it?
I didn't enjoy it. I think it's a personality thing. I don't like the camera. I don't like the social media stuff. I've never been good at it, not comfortable with it. I committed to BYU pretty early too, so I had a handful of visits, but I just wanted to commit to the school I wanted to go to and move on.
So BYU was always the dream school for you?
I think to start out, and then especially, you know, I loved all the former coaches, but when Kalani came in and then Ty to recruit quarterbacks, I was kind of a done deal, so.
And you decided to serve a mission. Was mission always on the table for
you? Yep. It was either the mission or the military, and so I chose the mission. That was more for me. It was always in the books.
Where military? Any specific?
My dad's joke with us. You know, he's either once you turn 18, you're out the house. So you take your pick. You can go to the military. You can go to the mission. We're not paying for your school, so. It was kind of the running joke in the family. And he got this dang sign above the back door that said, checkout time is 18 or something like that. He thought it was funny, and my mom. So it was always in the cards for me.
I may need to get one of those signs.
It's a good – now that I'm a dad, I get it. I'm eventually going to invest in one, I think.
Okay, so we mentioned you decide to go on a mission, and you serve in Roseville, California.
Roseville.
So tell everybody about the California Roseville
CRM,
mission.
CRM, yeah. It was great. It was really fun. I had not heard of Roseville, California when I got my call. I think I pronounced it Roseville. I was thinking beaches and palm trees. And little did I know, there was a whole lot of inland of California that's a lot like here. Mountains, forest, beautiful place, a lot of rain. It was really fun. I had a good time in Roseville.
How did your testimony grow, your own personal testimony grow during that time?
I think it became my testimony. You know, I don't know how much it grew a lot. You know, I probably can't measure it, but it became mine. You know, I was living off of, you know, that kind of horizontal relationship to God through my parents, through teachers, through being at church. And then as a missionary, when I start teaching it and kind of perfecting, you know, or not perfecting, but understanding what it is we truly believe and in what, you know, brings us salvation, the Savior, then I started to, you know, gain that vertical relationship. I always knew God was real and that the Savior loved me and you know, the basic principles. But when you actually are helping other families come closer to the Savior and you feel that, I think that's just an additional blessing you receive from the Lord for you know, that service. And it shaped, you know, not just my spiritual life, but I think it shaped football for me in the future too. So my testimony of life and of hard work grew quite a bit.
What part of the missionary handbook discusses purse snatching events?
How do you know that?
There was the Deseret News, an article in the Deseret News.
I didn't think I've ever told that story.
Talk about it, a purse snatcher event involved in. Tell everybody the story.
And I just had lunch, or we had dinner with my trainer that time, Jacob Sanborn. I was just at his house like a month ago, and we were just talking about that. That's funny. Yeah, we was like my third or fourth week, and we're in Lincoln, California, and we're going to knock on a member's door to go in and talk to him and his kids. And we just hear this lady screaming, and we turn around, and some dude, it's just like a movie. Dude had a beanie on. He looked like the Sticky Bandits from Home Alone, just looked like Harry or Marv. I don't know who, but grabs the purse, runs around the corner. So we hop in our car, and we start traveling down the street, and she runs up, and she tries to get in our car, and we had to tell her, sorry, we can't, you know, we're missionaries, can't let women in the car, and I apologize. She's like, well, you can go get them then or something. And so we kind of trail them a little bit, and funny enough, he ended up in our backyard of our house. We had this little shack in the back that had our washer and dryer.
He just happened to go to your house?
There was an alleyway, and he jumped the fence into our backyard, and he's hiding back in our laundry room. And we're just kind of sitting out front of the house like, this is so bizarre. And then the cops show up, get him, and we go on to our lesson. So it was a weird first couple of weeks. I never imagined that happened. But
yeah, if that happened in the first month, you've got to be wondering what in the world else is going to happen to me if I'm just going through something like this in the first month.
Exactly. And then from then on, it was pretty chill, actually. So, so it was set pretty high on the excitement scale, and then from there, it mellowed out.
No more crime-fighting opportunities?
No. We stayed far away from the law. We did the spiritual fighting, so...
So obviously, despite what maybe the outside world thinks about missions, mm-hmm. There is not a physical benefit for leaving for 2 years.
Heavens no.
But it's a major benefit spiritually, developmentally, etc. How did the Lord help you grow while you were a missionary? Where did you see the most growth in you during that time?
I think the ability to get through hard things, like stuff didn't get easier, but I felt like my resolve, strength to get through hard stuff got a lot stronger. And I think that continues to grow. And that started on the mission. Just, you know, you're a kid, you have a phone all the time, you have the comforts of home, 17 years old, and then you're tossed in the mission field with a stranger you got to get to know, no social media, no movies, no downtime, just work. And so I just feel like the Lord strengthened me through that and helped me realize how much stronger I am to, you know, do real life, you know, not the high school life that's so convenient, and to learn to get through hard things. So I think my resolve and handling conflict and, you know, stressful times just grew a lot. And that carried me through school at BYU, through sports, you know, my family life, marriage with kids, all of it, you know, just, I think it just helped strengthen me a little bit.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about what Jaron's life was like after his mission, coming back and getting ready for a couple of different sports. This is the Deep Blue Podcast. My guest is Jaron Hall, and this is BYU Radio. Hi, everybody. Jason Shepherd here, host of the Deep Blue Podcast. I want to make sure that you're aware of all of the other great podcasts we have on BYU Radio, like Her Why, hosted by Lauren McLean. It's all BYU women's athletics all the time. These great athletes join Lauren to share their personal stories of triumphs and trials, and we've got some of the best women's athletic teams in the NCAA. This is their story. This is their why. Listen to it wherever you get podcasts. Welcome back to the Deep Blue Podcast here on BYU Radio. I'm your host, Jason Shepherd. My guest, former BYU quarterback, Jaren Hall. And before the break, we were talking about your mission to Roseville, California. So let's push it forward. Getting close to the end of your mission, how much, if any, did you pay attention to what was going on at BYU while you were gone?
I dabbled a little bit. We had some good members that would bring us over at dinner time at just the right time on Saturdays. So,
oh, the game's on.
Yeah. We got a member or a non-member friend here. Come on over, have dinner with us, you know, or an inactive friend here. So come do some missionary work. So, yeah, that and sacrament meeting, you know, and they caught on pretty quick. So the members were always great at just giving the update. And my brother was KJ was playing, so I got the weekly updates there. So I was pretty in the loop.
If memory serves, I believe there was video of you out throwing like the day you got home or the day after you got home.
I'm sure there was.
If I'm remembering correctly, I'm pretty sure it was Jaren Hall is home and he's already out throwing. I mean, when you got back, was it sports? Like, let's get right back into this.
It was a fine transition. Physically was tough. I started at the school here training with, it was Dallin Holker. He had just finished school too, high school. And me and him were the two that came in together, and we started doing our plate pushes like 3 days after I got home. I was there with the team working out, and I took one course to make sure I was eligible for that. I think it was the spring bridge or something. So I started pretty quick. PRPs with the guys throwing. Rough transition physically, just getting it all back. But pretty, I mean, now that I think back at it, it was, I mean, they had it all, you know, lined up for us pretty good. It was smooth.
So you came home, you redshirt your first year on the team. Was that always the plan, or did you think
there was? I think so. I mean, Tanner was there. Zach had just got there. Joe was there. I think if I'm missing anybody else that played before. Bo was there before he moved to running back. So I think that was always in the cards for me.
So what was that first year like for you, just sort of getting your bearings again?
Yeah, just trying to figure it out. I mean, I feel like I'd forgotten so much about high school football. To this day, I still can't remember. Shame on me. I hope my coaches don't hear. I can't remember a single play call we had in high school, like what we did, like drills or, you know, how we think about the game. I had lost so much, like, IQ in the game. So I just had to learn as much as I could from A-Rod and Coach Grimes, you know, while I was there in that offense. So it was a mentally straining year once the body came back and the season started. And it was all about mental, just trying to speed up the game, learn football. It felt like from square one for me. So it was it was a lot of learning.
You've mentioned it a couple of times since we started the podcast, and you mentioned playing baseball growing up. But for a while, you were both BYU football and on BYU baseball, and as you had mentioned, that's where you and I got to really get to know each other more on a personal level in the dugout. What role did baseball play in your life? And take me through the thought process on, at least at that time, playing both.
Yep, baseball was the first sport I ever played. I love baseball. I don't believe in forcing kids to do anything, but Kyler will play baseball. He will be forced into doing that. I think that's the best sport to start your kids in, with hand-eye coordination mixed with running, rotational athletics. Basketball's a good one, too, for all that stuff, but I just think baseball does it all, which is funny because you see a lot of out-of-shape baseball players in the MLB, so a lot of people think that's crazy to say. But baseball set the tone for me in terms of just being athletic, learning to throw the ball. And so baseball started it out, and then I just loved playing it. I was always a really good player. I never fully got to give in to baseball because I played three sports in high school. Football is the only sport I ever have been to do that. So I still have thoughts sometimes of, man, what if I had just played baseball and just focused on that from high school on? And I think I'd, you know, have a pretty good career in baseball too. But you know, 162 games?
162.
That's a lot of games. So that put me off right there.
And to that point, it is a perfect lead into what I wanted to ask you next. I remember Coach Littlewood, former baseball coach, telling me that he believed if you had focused solely on baseball, that he thought you were a major leaguer.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how serious of a thought was that for you?
I think initially it was because I hadn't touched the field. I don't think I had played yet. I think it's a year after is when Zach got hurt. So I don't think I had touched the field yet in football, and that was still kind of a dream to get on the football field. But baseball seemed, I mean, it was right there. I played that first year. It was more attainable, and I was horrible. I think I hit like one. I was like 148 or something as a freshman. But in my defense, when you haven't seen a curveball or changeup in almost 3 years, it's tough to do. Hitting a baseball is so dang hard. So other than a little bit of stress from being up at the plate, I thought I could have been pretty good.
There are two instances with you specifically with baseball that come to mind. The first one is I remember, so this is when you were still doing football and baseball, and it was during spring practices. You got done with spring practice with football. There was a game that night at Miller Park. The baseball game had already started.
Yep.
You come in. I remember you have a plate of food in your hand. You know what I'm talking about.
Jelly runs into the fence.
Yes.
Oh gosh.
There's an immediate injury, and you're stuffing your face full of food because you just got done with practice and you're hungry.
I'm chilling in the dugout.
Luckily, you've got your uniform on, but yeah.
Yeah.
Jelilich gets
hurt. He
run
into the fence, yeah.
And you're called into the game within 5 minutes of getting into the dugout.
I was in the dugout when I was in the locker room putting my cleats on, and someone comes in like, oh, you're back. Like, Jelly just ran into a fence and he's out. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Here we go. I think I just threw my stuff on, grab a couple bites. That's what you saw in the dang dugout. My mom probably brought me a crumble cookie or something to give me a little sugar spike. I don't know. Dude. That was a crazy day.
To me, that was the perfect scenario to describe that time of your life.
It was
where
nuts.
Practice with football during the day, you come in trying to get a bite to eat, and you're immediately pulled into a baseball game that was already going on.
Yeah, kind of insanity. Not smart when I think back on it. Not good for the body, not good for the school grades, but, you know, we're just living life.
There
having
you go.
Having a good time.
So you started 27 games in 2019, a few more in the shortened 2020 season. The best baseball memory for you, do you have one? Is there something that stands out to you?
The New Mexico series was pretty good until I went 0-3 on the last day. But that was the highlight. I think I was like 5 for 6 on day two. Had the grand slam, bunch of RBIs. They kept throwing me fastballs. So I said, thank you very much. And then day three, their head coach comes over and is like, hey, you're a football player, huh? I'm like, yeah. It's like, okay, I can tell you, he's saying some stuff about what they're going to throw me. I can't remember. And then I got out there. I didn't see another fastball the whole day. And then COVID hit, and that was the baseball. That was my experience right
yes.
there. That was done for me.
There were two things that I remember from that series in Albuquerque. Number one is your grand slam, because that was the first grand slam that I ever got to call.
Really?
In fact, you know what? We actually have this call. I've not heard this call. I have no idea if this is a good call or not.
About to run it?
Let's hear it.
I haven't heard it.
Let's hear this. The 2-0 pitch to Hall.
Oh, yes.
That ball hit
yes.
deep
oh,
into
yes.
left field.
Oh, yes. Oh,
at the
yes.
track.
Is that Tuck saying, oh, yes?
Tuck says, oh, yes. Jared Hall.
That's awesome.
And BYU now leads this game.
Jared Hall.
By a score of 15-5.
Oh, we were spanking him, too.
Yeah.
Oh, we were up big.
Yeah, well, put up 18 runs that game.
Jeez.
So that's what I remember. That's one of the two things I remember. The other thing that I remember from that series in Albuquerque was the wind and how cold
was
it
bad? I don't remember.
The wind was insane. And the reason that stands out to me so much was because there was not enough room for Tuckett and I in the press box. So they had us out on the bleachers amongst the fans doing the calls.
Yeah, at least bring you some hot cocoa or something, man. My word.
Yeah. So anyway, so those are the things that I remember was the wind and your grand slam, which was my first ever grand slam to be able to call.
Look at that. Look at us, Shep. Look at us. First reverse grand slam, first call. How about that?
Look at that. And here we are. Here we are doing a podcast.
Here we are. Four or five
X number
five
of years later.
Jeez. That's funny.
All right. Let's get back to football. So how did that first football season go in 2019? How did you feel in terms of sort of trying to master the offense and kind of getting back in the swing of things?
Yeah, having a couple games to play, some good, some bad. I think that just built the confidence, if anything, just to know I can play. And then it was about just, you know, changing the body as much as I can to stay healthy, playing smarter. You know, eliminating some of those concussions that I got that year. But it was a big confidence boost. And then getting that next spring, I think it was the spring after. I think Zach had his thumb surgery maybe. So I got a bunch of reps going into COVID before the injury. But that 19 season was it was important for me.
Well, and you get hurt at USF. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the concussions, Utah State. Mm-hmm. That to me, and I've said this on air multiple times, the first half mm-hmm. of you quarterbacking that game was one of the best examples of a quarterback that I have ever seen.
Yeah.
That was unbelievable. And then for it to end the way it did with the concussion.
It's frustrating.
How frustrating was the injury situation that year?
It was bad. It was emotional when I got concussed in the Utah State game. Just because you don't ever hope for anybody to get injured ever. But, you know, I had another chance to come back and play again. Then I get hurt again, you know, as I'm playing good. It's just like, you know, it's the dream of playing at BYU, of starting, blah, blah, blah. You know, I'm on my soapbox, right? But it's just frustrating. And that's what the NFL felt like my rookie year, too. Same thing, you know. So it's kind of like, what do you do, man, when it happens this often? I just try to roll with the punches. And so there were some good lessons from 19 to learn on the field and off the field mentally, you know, from going through that. So just a lot of learning for me.
Concussions can be very scary. They are very scary. Mm-hmm. Did you ever at any point ever think about maybe hanging it up because of injuries and concussions?
No. A lot of people like to give their opinions online. A lot of people said I should or, you know, whatever. But I never did because, you know, the medical professionals I talk to, everyone's like, as long as you heal your brain completely, it's like mm-hmm. any other injury. Obviously, it gets a little easier each time. But in terms of your health, as long as you are fully healed before you go back and play, you know, you're good to go. So me and Bree never had any feeling that I should slow down or stop. Trusted that I could, you know, get better and limit them. And I did. You know, I went through the whole 2022 season without one. Took a lot of big hits. It was great. Then just got unlucky the next year. But feel like I've done better. So
how much do you feel you gained in terms of knowledge? Just overall experience, having to sit out and watch and learn. How much more prepared do you think you were when your opportunity did come? Even though maybe at the time you didn't like not being able to play, but the ability to be able to learn and watch, how much do you think that prepared you for when time came?
It was huge to have the full three seasons, 18, a little bit of play in 19, and then to redshirt, you know, Medicare, whatever they considered it, that COVID year for me when I was out. To fully watch that, to signal, to be in the room. Then when I played, I had three full years of just burning it into my brain. The same words, the same plays, watching all the reps from Tanner and Zach. And it went a long way to when I got in there. It just felt, you know, smooth, seamless, and just, you know, ran off with it from there.
Needless to say, a lot of people will remember that you were the quarterback when the streak was broke against a certain team wearing red. What do you remember from that game and how big that was and the moment when that became a final score and you realized that streak was over?
I remember not stepping out of bounds and having to run my butt back 60 yards with half the other guys to snap another ball. That's what I remember, and I will never let that go. I did not step out of bounds, Shep. What do you think? You think I stepped out?
No.
That's my dog.
No, nope. What did that game mean to you and the team?
I think after it was over, it was pretty awesome. Like in the locker room, giving the ball to Kalani, like realizing how much it meant to so many people that had coached there, had, you know, played there, transferred from there with Sam. Just it was a lot more emotion after than before. You know, we always took the approach of, you know, just focusing on the next game, not making it more than anything else. And I still believe in that. But it was after the game. We could kind of, you know, just take a deep breath, let all the stress go, all the adrenaline. And it was fun. We were there for a long time, many, many hours after the game was over. I don't think I got home till like 4 or 5 in the morning, having, you know, my wife there with Jada. I think that was the only game she went to that year. She went to the Arizona game. That was the second game she went to. Just taking a picture with her and having that forever with her and Bree and all my homies from high school. It was a good memory with the team, a memory for me and, you know, the people, the loved ones in my life. And just to have that forever, you know, for my home school and, you know, to be at a team that didn't love. And, you know, so it's pretty fun to look back on.
What lessons were learned in that 2022 season for you and this team? You guys have, you beat Baylor at home in overtime and then there's some struggles that year.
Just don't play Utah State anymore. That's what I learned. Should have sat out. No. Just to have resolve. It's kind of like my mission. It was, it was tough going after I, did my AC against Utah State, trying to get my arm back again. And, it's frustrating for a couple weeks to lose so many games. But then to finish on the note that we did, Sol Jay playing quarterback in the last game was pretty fun. Yeah. Just to go out that way, it meant a lot to us. I know to some fans it was a big letdown. To me, it was too. I think we should have been just as good as the year before, if not better. So it's frustrating, but, we ended on the right note. A lot of guys got better for the year, next year to come. Won 8 games, won a bowl game. Didn't do that the year before. So a lot of good things came from that. Just learned, the right way to finish. We could have rolled over and died very easily after losing. I think it was like 4 or maybe 5 in a row. I don't remember. Pretty poor job. But, we came back and finished our business, so.
The 2023 season, there were a lot of BYU fans that desperately wanted you to come back for one more year. How close was that to actually happening, or was that never really in the cards for you?
No, it was really close. A lot of phone calls, a lot of people, loved ones, coaches, people I looked up to that have been in the NFL, just trying to, get their opinions for what they do in my shoes and just talking to Bree about what we wanted to do, where we felt like we were at in our life, if we wanted to stay again or not. And it was tough. I remember a lot of people were angry that I was taking so long because they needed to find somebody else, and it's understandable, but I wasn't going to rush any decision that, had implications on my future and my family's future. So I wanted to come back, but it needed to just make more sense to me, with the opportunity that I had in the NFL. And, it just didn't. So, here we are now.
What was the deciding factor? What was the tip of the scales for you? Or was it maybe not just one thing?
I think it wasn't just one thing, but I think under an umbrella is just about, progression, moving on to the next thing in our life. It's about not getting comfortable. I think I learned that in the mission. You can't grow when you're comfortable. And like I said, I wanted to stay because it'd be the easier thing to do. I realized how tough the NFL would be in that transition. So it was just about, what felt best for Bree and I. That was to move on with Jada and to start our life somewhere else.
So one of the things that I remember, another baseball tie-in, was your draft day. Happened to be during a BYU baseball game because we were on the air. Because I remember Dawson was not at the game. He had gone home to be part of the draft party and then came back after the fact.
I do remember that.
So there's another baseball tie-in that I remember being able to pass along that you had been drafted. Mm-hmm. What's that moment like for you to hear your name?
It was surreal to be on a call with an NFL GM, an NFL head coach, just a culmination of all the work that you put in all your life. The work I put in there with my dad and my brothers, who were all there to enjoy with me, the stress that Bree and I went through together, long nights in college and injuries and just everything to get to that point. And then to think about what the future could be like. It was a beautiful day. And, my family, they just loved every second for me, which I appreciated. And, it was really fun to have all of our loved ones there, grandparents, in-laws. It was just a good day. See all the hard work finally, come together. But any competitor's mind, it's kind of not, because then you realize, okay, now there's more work to do. Right. It's like there's never a time to really just soak it up, until you win a Super Bowl or something. But it was a cool day. Fun one to check off.
Explain to those, and it's going to be most of us, who will never have the opportunity to play in the NFL, let alone get a start like you have. What is that experience like to be an NFL player out on an NFL field in that environment?
It's pretty cool. I've never been one to let the moment like change the way I think or see, but the first time I stepped out in Seattle in our first preseason game, I was like, bro, this is pretty cool. This is, how many times I've watched the game on TV or talked to buddies about an NFL player. Now I'm here playing. It was preseason, but I'm here. Got the white and purple on, and it's pretty awesome. I remember just feeling like happy, like this is fun. This is I get paid to do this. This is a great time, and then obviously it gets tougher from there because you realize the season's a little bit different and it gets a little more stressful, but it was really fun being on that field the first time. And you know, NFL football as a quarterback, the offense is fully open to you. There's a lot of good football to have. So if you're someone who just loves to learn football, you know, if it's for your future or, you know, just for that moment, it was really cool. It opened my eyes to a lot of stuff, and hopefully I get to do it for, you know, a lot longer.
Yeah, that's we all hope that that's something that's in your very near future with camps coming up in just a couple of weeks. Jaron, it is always good to see you. Thanks so much for coming in today and doing this. It's always great to catch up, man.
Always good, Shep. Glad we were able to do this.
Absolutely. All right, thanks to my guest once again, Jaron Hall. My name is Jason Shepherd. Ben Hall produced this episode. Deep Blue's senior producer is Cleon Wall. You can download and subscribe to Deep Blue on all podcast platforms or find all episodes on the BYU Radio app. Deep Blue is a production of BYU Radio.